Well, welcome everyone to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in these anxious times that we are in. And my name is Irvin Nugent. And as always, I am joined by my friend, my co-host, my collaborator, person who I'll have an amazing conversation with today, and that is Bridget Tyre. Bridget, how are you doing?
Well, hello, everybody. And Irvin, I'm doing great. Before we got together and started recording, I was outside taking a walk. And Today happens to be a gorgeous day. And you know how that puts a pep in my step. It's sunny. The humidity is low. There is just a slight little tinge of maybe fall coming around the corner. And you and I have talked about this before, but I think we're both like affected by the weather, like most humans, right? Yep. And today is a spectacular day. So I'm in a good place. And I am really excited about this conversation, although maybe that sounds like a weird choice of words because we're going to be talking about, well, Irvin, tell them what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah. So the title of today's podcast is Can Leaders Cry at Work? This is a topic which makes leaders and managers very uncomfortable. And yet it is so important. Crying and sadness at work, tears at work, and indeed, even outside of work, has long been wrapped with a little bit of stigma. It's been seen as weak or unprofessional. You know, get yourself together. You don't cry at work. But the reality is, you know, sadness is part of human experience. I have said this ad nauseum, that there are no good or bad emotions. Emotions are conveyors of information. And sadness evolved very beautifully. We have it, and it's part of our experience. So inevitably, it's going to show up in the workplace. It's about loss, and the workplace is full of loss. And so the question then becomes, how do we as managers and leaders respond to, even honor these moments without losing effectiveness? So I think we can all acknowledge it is uncomfortable, but we have to honor it and manage it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're going to dive into today. And, you know, the research is clear, both women and men. We each have all different, you know, social understandings around this, but we have cried at work. And that has been caused by, God knows, frustration, grief, overwhelm, even empathy. And yet, it's very rarely talked about openly. Mm-hmm. So let's unpack a little bit of these myths, the meaning, and some of the leadership lessons we can learn from tears at work. So Bridget, as we dive into this, I'm just really curious, what have you noticed about yourself when you've experienced sadness or tears, maybe in a professional setting?
It's a really great question. So, you know, one thing I've noticed is that as a coach, there'll be times, and I mean, they're pretty frequent, where a client will be talking and all of a sudden emotion will catch in their voice.
Yeah.
And they'll stop, you know, and then they'll try to quickly collect themselves and they'll say, I'm just so sorry. You know, like, and then I always say, don't be sorry. What's there for you?
Yeah.
What's coming to the surface? So to your point, I think we're all very, really uncomfortable with it. And even when somebody is working with a coach, they don't want to show that vulnerability and emotion.
Yes. Yes.
So that's one thing I notice. I've also noticed that as I've gotten more comfortable with it myself, because I didn't used to be, you know, as a young professional, it was all the things that you said. I wanted to always be put together, contained, you're in charge of yourself, you know, and I would never dare to show tears or even really sadness, I think. As I've learned that it's part of our humanity and something, as you said, to be honored, and I've gotten more comfortable with it, people show it more to me.
Yeah.
You know, they trust that it's the safe space. But I got to tell you, one other thing that happened recently that I thought, wow, do we have a long way to go on this, is that a client of mine lost their spouse. Mm-hmm. And it had been a very devastating illness and married for a long time. And of course, big heartbreak. actually, he came back to work really early and in a senior team meeting, kind of got emotional. And boy, you know, people are like, ooh, you know, not sure what to do. And he later apologized to me. And I said, why are you apologizing? So this is the depth of our uncomfortableness with the nature of sadness and tears in the workplace, whether the cause is work-related or personal, it doesn't seem to matter. We just know we're not supposed to go there. So that's been my experience. How about you?
Yeah, kind of likewise a little bit. I think as I've reflected on this, I think how it's dealt with has a very close relationship with the ability of the leader in the room or the manager or someone who's acting that to deal with it.
Yeah.
And to have comfort with it. I've been in situations where, because I think there's a point where you kind of mentioned, you know, the voice begins to break and that emotionality and everyone is so aware of it, or there's some tears, et cetera. And people are waiting for someone to say, it's okay. And if the person doesn't go there, then, you know, it's kind of unresolved and the person feels embarrassed and it's just, it leaves just a distaste, and but yet handled well. I've been in situations where it was handled very beautifully and tenderly, yeah, and sensitively. And there was just this permission and there was just a sigh. And then we went on and we moved on to the next topic, you know? So I think that's the thing about it, but it is, there is a vulnerability about it. I mean, this is, there's no getting away from that. To show tears is an act of vulnerability. And just like saying I did something wrong or any other act of vulnerability in the workplace, it is tough. And yet for those who show it, then it becomes an opportunity for greater bonding as well. Because people, you know, if I remember a situation where someone had lost a loved one and got emotional about that. And I remember I was checking in with him. This is when I was leading an organization. I checked in with him the following day and I said, hey, thank you for sharing that. How are you doing today? Is that things going? And they just said, oh, you know, I had so many people come up to me afterwards and thank me for that. So that act of vulnerability enabled other people as well to feel that they as well could go down that road. So it's a tough topic, but one that's so important, because boy, is there so much loss in the workplace.
Yeah. And I think that's why I said at the beginning that I was so excited to have this conversation, because so much is at stake.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Bridget, we kind of like zoom out and we say, look, there's a systems perspective in everything that's happening. So I'm curious around this topic of crying and sadness, if we try to zoom out and say, what is it saying about the system, or what could it point to in the system? What's some thoughts you might have on that?
Yeah, I love that you're asking us to zoom out, because a systems perspective doesn't come easily, right? And so when we're not thinking systems, we think of things that happen as individual isolated events.
Yes.
They're not connected to anything else, right?
Yeah.
So if somebody is sad, it's got nothing to do with me or anything around me. It's their issue, you know?
Yep.
But we know that all relationship systems have an emotional system, have an emotional component to them. And when anxiety in that relationship system rises, right, whether it's because of change or pressure or fast growth or uncertainty, it has to go somewhere. And so it goes off and it shows up in emotions. And for some people, it might show up as frustration or anger. But for other people, it might be sadness and tears.
Yeah.
So it's like a barometer oftentimes of what's going on in the system in that regard. I think the other thing that's important to keep in mind is that sadness and then tears specifically can be a release valve, right? That's interesting, because it reveals something important in the system that has maybe been suppressed, ignored, or overlooked. I think the other thing is just remembering that when we view tears only as an awkward problem to avoid, we miss an opportunity. Because in reality, tears can point to deeper truths about what is going on for human beings, you know, in that system, what's really going on for them and what's at stake. Because sadness and tears means something we care deeply about, we feel is at risk in some way. So, you know, for example, I was having a coaching session with someone the other day, and they had that catch in the throat when they were talking about work and overload and capacity and all this kind of stuff. You know, I paused to ask them, what emotion are you experiencing? And they said, sadness. And I said, what's in that sadness? There's something you care about in there. And they said, yeah, I care so much about doing great work. And I'm so worried I won't be able to. Mm-hmm. And that led us into a very interesting conversation then. Mm-hmm. And so we miss this opportunity, don't we? You know, Irvin, when we don't see sadness and tears as revealing something important to us, not just about the person, but maybe about the system at large.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that resonate?
Yeah. I love that perspective. You know, as you were talking as well, Bridget, one other thing came up to me as well. You know, sometimes when we ask someone about, you know, tell me a little bit, you know, where is the sadness coming? People are very aware, oh, it's I've lost someone, I lost a loved one, or this, that, and the other. I often find when people struggle, I don't know, it just came upon me that's a real indicator of what you've been, but a more systemic thing that I'm not, I feel this weight. I feel the anxiety of the system, but I can't point to a particular thing that happened, but it's just, I'm overcome with sadness or tears or something. And it's a beautiful opportunity to kind of explore a little deeper. And I think when we don't have the words or the cause of where it's coming from, I think it's an indication that it's something even bigger that's kind of expressing ourselves through us. I think that's a real opportunity for a great conversation.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And of course we have to not be so afraid of it, you know? Yeah. So what can leaders do then, Irvin? So we're going to encounter this, right? I mean, before we hit the record button, you and I were talking about how many managers, particularly men, but not just men, are so afraid of somebody crying in their office that they're literally like they have an escape route. So what, practically speaking, can leaders do when they encounter this?
So I think the first thing is that we have to normalize it and humanize it. Sadness is a human emotion, which is normal. In the human experience, sadness is one of those emotions, and we can't demonize it. Now, this is where the learning comes, because we have to acknowledge that perhaps it makes us uncomfortable. And so part of that is we have to become a little more comfortable in our awkwardness. And I wonder if part of the awkwardness is that we feel in those moments we have to have the right answer. We have to have the solution to the tears. And I think what we really have to bring is just a presence which is permitting it to happen.
Yeah.
And I think maybe just in that, just through acknowledgement. And that one is, you know, something like, I can really see this is important. And it just creates a space for the person just to kind of express it and to acknowledge that it's happening, and it's normalizing it. Yeah. And just admit that in that moment of the tears, maybe it's not the moment where you're going to have this deep, wonderful conversation, but we're just acknowledging that. I think that's really important. And then I think the other part, which is kind of following up from that, is then there's a story behind the tears. What is that story? We focus on the tears, but in reality, the tears are a clue, and they're a clue to a bigger story. And so what is the bigger story? Is it about stress? Is it about a conflict that's been unresolved? Is it about some personal struggles that a person is it's just become too much and it's now carrying itself into work? Does a person feel excluded? And so rather than feeling we have to fix it, last week we talked about curious questions. Maybe it's an opportunity for us just to be curious. And, you know, just a simple little question is, hey, you know, to the extent it's possible, can you share something of what's underneath this for you? It's an opportunity. And the person, you know, we want to honor the person might not want to talk about it, but I think we provide a space, a safety space to say, you know, to the extent you can share a little bit. And that, I think, then can open the door to connection, and then open the door when we're ready to some problem solving. You know, but we can't go into problem solving immediately. We have to create a space that allows the person to really kind of explain, you know, this is what's happening, you know, and because a person wants to feel seen in the midst of that.
Yeah, I think it's really hard not to go into fix it mode, you know, right? Yeah. As soon as we hear sadness, emotion, maybe some tears, boy, we want to fix that in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that the truth? Yeah. Anything else, Bridget? Anything else come to mind as you think about this?
Well, it's kind of building on what you just said. And I think it's that we have to balance compassion with clarity, right? So in other words, we have to meet sadness with compassion because to your point, what you just said, people want to be heard. They want to be seen. And if somebody is expressing sadness in front of us, then we just go, okay, so let's talk about what we can do to fix this problem. We don't feel seen.
Yeah.
You know? So we start there with that compassion and acknowledgement, right? And then, of course, we're in the workplace and we're managers and leaders. And so we have to balance that with some kind of forward momentum. So, you know, after acknowledgement and creating space for that and some curious questions, then we can maybe guide ourselves and others to a place of, so where do we go from here? What are our next steps, you know, or what do we need to remember here? So I think that's the other thing that I would add. And that's not an easy balance to strike. Have you witnessed yourself, Irvin, an example of a leader who was able to strike that balance well?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I want to bring up an example because I think it's interesting as we look for examples, people who do this well. There was a very famous example this year which caused a lot of stir in the United Kingdom. It kind of came a little bit to the US. It concerned there the Chancellor of the Exchequer, which is the Treasury, the person who's in charge of the Treasury in the United Kingdom. And it's a woman called Rachel Reeves. And earlier this year in July, and she is, just for some context, has been called colloquially the Iron Chancellor. Very, very disciplined, and she's very orthodox in her economic style. There's an event that happens in the United Kingdom in the Parliament called Prime Minister's Questions, where they get to ask each other questions and the good old debate. And she normally sits behind the Prime Minister. She was seen to be visibly emotional, and tears were rolling down her cheek.
Mm.
Now, in some workplaces, that might pass quickly, but not in this place where the cameras are on. It created really an exaggerated reaction.
Mm.
And there was just an immense press about it, where this glare of the camera and this pressure to be composed. And so she was judged as being weak. And within hours, she was being mocked and questioned whether, you know, the emotion had taken hold of her. Financial markets even reacted because of her.
Oh, my gosh.
This is crazy, you know. And it wasn't before the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, reaffirmed that, you know, she's fine and she's not going anywhere. But, you know, the next day, what was sad a little bit is that she herself was forced to respond. You know, she said, and I quote, "People saw I was upset, but that was yesterday. Today's a new day, and I'm cracking on with the job." This inability, I put it there because I think it really points to the pressure that a lot of leaders feel. And let's be very clear here, a lot of women as well feel that are very double standards here, that for women, you know, tears are seen as a sign of weakness, et cetera, and they're becoming overly emotional. And how often have we heard this, you know? And so therefore, it has to be tucked away and cleaned up. And so it's one thing in a politician, but, you know, I think it's in a lot of workplaces that crying undermines authority. I use that example in that we have a long way to go.
We do.
That to be able to acknowledge the fact of our humanity and an opportunity for humanity to connect, and that this moment, rather than being weak, is actually an opportunity to deepen trust, to strengthen connection, and our common humanity, our common bonds of humanity. Because I think if we don't go down that route, what we're doing is we're creating something which is unrealistic, that we are these composed, unemotional bodies. And I think if anything we know from the research and work is that people want to be seen, people want to belong, The surveys are horrible about people feeling disconnected, feeling depressed at work. So we know there is so much sadness at work. And yet here we have with this cultural phenomena that leaders don't show this vulnerability. And I think it is a little bit of a crisis. And I think that example just shows that and how far we have to go.
Yeah. And it kind of saddens me, Irvin, that her expression, which was certainly not, it's not like she broke down and sobbed.
No, just the simple act, yeah.
Yeah. And yet the reaction was just off the charts. And then she felt compelled to clean it up the next day.
Yeah.
Again, that's the missed opportunity.
Yeah. I'm curious, Bridget, just from your experience, I think you asked me this as well. I brought this example, but a leader who you've seen who've really done a good job in that balance we talked about of this compassion and the clarity.
Yeah, I do. I actually have, I think, a really good example, and it was inspiring for me, which is a senior leader in healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. So he was having a team meeting, and this was actually, I think, during a time when there was a great shortage of staff, particularly nurses, and there were nurses in this meeting. And they were talking about the challenges of taking good care of patients under these extraordinary circumstances where there was a shortage. And one nurse, as she spoke, began to cry. And the room got really quiet because it was crying. She wasn't just, you know, it wasn't like a single tear rolled down her face. There was some real sadness and grief there. And what he did is instead of brushing past it, or trying to rush in to solve it quickly, he paused. And first of all, he acknowledged it and he thanked her for her honesty. He also acknowledged how hard that must have been to allow that true emotion to be present in front of the team, right? Which I think, you know, was wonderful. And then, and only then, did he invite the group into the conversation and to talk about what support might be needed during these times to get through and to get through these times in a better and a more whole way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think, well, wow, that's such a great example, isn't it, of what we're saying here, which is honoring the sadness, seeing it as a signal, and then maintaining some forward momentum that gives people some hope for the future. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that example. Yeah. That simple pausing to acknowledge, because the reality is, you know, sadness, our emotions are contagious. And when someone is sad and crying, that's been caught by other people.
Yeah.
And I think the ability just to stop and acknowledge that, to acknowledge the shared pain, the sadness, and then, and only then, to kind of go into, okay, well then what kind of support do we need? Where do we go from here? I think that's so important. And that sounds so easy as I say it, and yet so difficult, because it is uncomfortable holding uncomfortable emotions. To be a leader and to hold that space, it's not easy, and it's a risk. And I think to do it well, I think it's offering a real gift to the people that we're leading.
Yeah, that's a nice way to say it. It is a gift. I just sort of had this thought, Irvin, which is that maybe part of the reason that we avoid this and we're a bit afraid of it is, to your point, we know emotions are contagious and we don't want to catch this. Right? And we don't want other people to catch it either.
Yes, sadness will not be shared. We will not have this going around.
That's right.
Only happiness, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Irvin, you know, this has just been a lovely conversation. And as we've discussed, sadness and tears at work, they're not signs of weakness. You know, they're just not. They're signs of our shared humanity. Mm-hmm. And so our real challenge as leaders is not to avoid them or suppress them or to flee from these encounters, but instead to meet them with presence and perspective, you know? Mm-hmm. So to our listeners, you know, remember that the next time you encounter sadness, you see sadness on the faces of the people around you, or you witness tears, whether your own or someone else's, Remember, it's not about erasing the emotion and getting on with things, right? It's about listening, acknowledging, connecting with, and then leading forward with both that compassion and that clarity. As you said, Irvin, it's easier said than done, but it's such a worthy practice because what is at stake is our connection and our sense of shared humanity.
Mm. Love that. Bridget, I love this conversation. It is a weighty topic, but yet I think it's something that's not talked about. And hopefully for those who are listening to the podcast, it's created just a little space for you to think about this. And, you know, it's all around you in the workplace. And maybe the next time you encounter it, as Bridget just said, you know, it's an opportunity and an invitation to really embrace some of that curiosity we talked about last episode and bonding with this other person and with those around you. So thank you for listening. We look forward to our next episode and we'll see you then. Goodbye, everyone.
Take care.